Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I'm your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Beaver. This is the Mooning Cancer Show. It is our salute to the cancer moonshot proposed and led by Vice President Joe Biden. And Rick, I've got, first of all, thanks to our listeners from Canada through True Talk Internet Radio and also on the web. I've got just a very brief thing about Joe Biden. But before I do that, I'm going to introduce my co-host, Rick Phillips, Manager of Communications Infrastructure at the University of Kentucky, to tell you how you too can listen to Health Matters on the internet.
First off, WMKY.org. That is Moorhead State Public Radio's website. That's where you go if you want to listen to the shows. You have to find the show, so go to the menus, find it. Look at the list of shows, pick the one you want, click on the link right there. You can actually listen to the show. You can listen to it anytime you'd like. If you decide to sign up for the podcast, it usually shows up about 4 days after the initial airing of the show, so just be patient and have Health Matters delivered directly to you. If, on the other hand, you want to interact, you have a question, raise your hand, so to speak. Jump over on Facebook. We know you like Facebook. Facebook.com/HM Radio Show. There is a fan page. And if you like it, you have the ability to leave messages. You can leave comments, show topics, some feedback. It is your way to get involved in the show. Certainly, we respond, we post there. Again, it is your opportunity to interact with us through that fan page at facebook.com/HM Radio Show.
Our sponsor for today's show, and this is the second week in a row, we are doing the top 10 allergy things that you must be aware of: asthma, eczema, allergic rhinitis. Here are some tips to help us and guide us. This is Robin Wilson, ambassador for the Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America, reminding you, tip number one, fruit is not always your friend. Many of our favorite fruits, apples to bananas to peaches and plums, cause symptoms similar to grass or tree pollen reactions. If you are sensitive, put the fruit in a microwave for 10 seconds to deactivate the proteins, and never, never, ever eat fruit peels because they are where much of the allergens actually reside. Fun fact number two, cleaner is not always better. A little exposure to dirt and germs is actually a good thing. It strengthens the immune system. Most allergy people do not necessarily agree with that. The main thing that we emphasize in Health Matters is do not use toxic chemicals to clean your house. The toxins themselves are more harmful than the allergens, in our opinion. Three, vintage pillows cause heavy symptoms. If your pillow is older than 3 years and has not been washed, it weighs more than when you bought it. It is loaded with dust mites that are right there in your face while you sleep. Use hypoallergenic pillows instead of down pillows. Use a zipper pillow protector that you wash weekly. Wash your pillow twice a year and replace it every 3 years. I do not replace my pillows.
Really?
I do not replace my pillows.
I actually haven't. I've got one of these therapeutics. I got it from the chiropractor. And it's got like the head cave out, you know, carved out in it. And you're right. It's pretty old. It's probably 7 or 8 years old.
Yeah, we had pillows that were decades old. We did replace those recently.
But you know what? My fear is I replace that pillow and I'll quit sleeping good. Okay. I'm already a superb sleeper. Right?
Rick, your watch tells you that you are
perhaps one of the greatest sleepers
in the Western Hemisphere.
Yes, I can sleep like nobody's business.
So you got to weigh the sleep difficulty. And, of course, you're not too bad with allergies. But if you have allergies, realize that the pillow can be a big problem. Fun fact number four, there's no such thing as a hypoallergenic dog. Poodles, labradoodles, and Yorkshire Terriers considered hypoallergenic because they don't shed. But there's no relationship that we know of scientifically between shedding and allergies. Try to limit your exposure to pets. Don't allow them on the bed. Do not allow your pets on the bed. I mean, you have to draw the line somewhere. If you have allergies and you have a pet in the bed, I cannot help you. Wash your hands thoroughly with soap and hot water after playing with an animal. And fun fact number five, tear out the carpet.
Make it sound so cold. Well, after playing with an animal.
I know, but here's the thing.
It's not like I got a muskrat running around in the house. I mean, it's my dog. It's my, you know.
And I will tell you,
Old
though,
Faithful.
If you come to me looking for medications for allergies and asthma, and I will always ask, do you have indoor pet? And you will say yes. And I will say, are they in the bed? And you will say yes. And I will go, look, I cannot. There is no inhaler. There is no pill made that is going to allow you to sleep next to an indoor pet and not suffer consequences. You know, you can't medicate away. That's like taking the acid blocking medicines, the purple pill, and eating onion rings. At some point, you got to give up the onion rings.
No, you don't. That's what affordable health care is for.
That's what America is for. and so that you don't have to have responsibility.
Come on, Tony. You're such a kill joint.
And fun fact number five, tear out the carpet. Tile and hardwood floors, much better choice if you keep them clean than carpet for people with allergies. That's our sponsor, our top 10 allergy tips, asthma, eczema, allergic rhinitis. Here are some tips to help us and guide us. The cancer moonshots. Joe Biden. First of all, just some facts. In 2013, 14 million people lived with cancer, and the National Cancer Institute says that about 1.6 million people will be newly diagnosed. Now, you may remember, Rick, you are old enough to remember this. Don't fake that you aren't. In 1971, President Richard Nixon declared a war on cancer, calling for a concentrated effort toward conquering this disease. Although the initiative devoted billions of dollars to cancer research, it did not conquer the disease. So, Joe Biden, and again, this is January of 2016, he wrote on a blog, he said, "In the course of the past few months, I've met with nearly 200 of the world's top cancer physicians, researchers, and philanthropists. The goal of my initiative, this moonshot, is to seize this moment to accelerate our efforts and progress toward a cure. Right now, only 5% of cancer patients in the U.S. end up in a clinical research trial. At the same time, community oncologists who treat more than 75% of cancer patients have a more limited access to cutting-edge research." So Biden planned to do two things. One, increase the resources to fight cancer, and two, break down silos and bring all the cancer fighters together to work together. Here's what he said. "The goal of this initiative, the Cancer Moonshot, is simple: to double the rate of progress, to make a decade worth of advances in 5 years." Now, when we talk about a moonshot, what is the goal of a moonshot?
To get to the moon.
Right. And how will you know that you've been successful?
You bring back a moon rock.
You land on the moon. Now, what is the goal of the cancer moonshot? Is to double the rate of progress.
It's kind of confusing, huh?
Yeah. I don't see
so
any moon rocks.
So we're twice as effective. We're halfway there. Twice as fast.
That'd be
four
now,
times.
Wait a minute. Okay, so
this is the whole point, Tony. They want to confuse us.
Yeah, and so
they want us to think they're going to the moon, and
don't
really
you
just
use that math stuff on me.
That's what they call fuzzy math.
I know,
that's
but
fuzzy math.
But you're absolutely right. I mean, how are we going to? I mean, a moonshot has a target. It has a goal. You get to the moon,
right?
And as you said, you bring back moon rocks. You take pictures. You leave a flag. It's all there.
Well, and cancer, it's nobody dies of cancer, right? If we're going to go after it, nobody dies of cancer.
Right. That will be the moonshot. We
right.
will
that's
cure
the moonshot.
Cancer. That's how
but
we know.
That's but not what they're saying the moonshot is. The moonshot is we're going to get better at trying to find out what's killing people.
Right.
Right? I mean, that's what we're saying.
And
we're going to do it twice as fast.
Saving people from cancer is really nothing like landing a man on the moon. It's a terrible analogy.
As amazing as going to the moon probably is and was, and technologically the challenges and the variability and all the factors that were unknown, cancer is still probably infinitely more complex.
So Alfred Neugut, the Herbert Irving Comprehensive Cancer Care Center at Columbia University, and Carrie Gross of Cancer Outcomes, Public Policy, and Effectiveness Research Center at Yale University wrote an editorial for the AMA Journal of Oncology back in April, and they pointed out that the real advances so far in reducing deaths from cancer are mainly prevention.
Wow.
You know, we've been able to stop people from smoking. Outside of Kentucky, people don't smoke very much. We've changed fresh instead of cured meat, which made a big difference. And we know that cured meat and red meat. And also we've used screening tests like pap smears very effectively. And they said in the ongoing fight, if you're trying to actually to reduce the number of people that that die of cancer, that's still those population things are going to be the big things.
Right.
This is not going to come from chemotherapy. It's not going to come from scientific research into new immunologic therapies. It instead is going to come from changing people's lifestyle and behavior. That's where the big gains would be. And once again, that's not really a moonshot to accelerate progress twice as fast and half the time divide by the four.
Carry
and
the
use
one.
The square root is not going to necessarily accomplish those goals. This is a public policy thing. It's not so much, he mentioned breaking down silos. Again, breaking down a silo is not exactly the same as a moonshot. So, not to belabor it too much, but we thought the idea of a cancer moonshot seemed like a silly idea. So do some other people. Cancer, and I think a war on cancer is probably as good. The only problem is it's turned into a 20-year war, a 30-year war now.
Right.
And because it was mid-70s, a 40-year war, and we have made progress, but we certainly have not, we did not conquer cancer, and we do not think that we're going to moonshot and land on cancer or whatever you would do in a moonshot. That doesn't seem to work either. On the other hand, I almost guarantee it will be successful if you say you're going to double the rate of progress. At some point, someone's going to pronounce the rate of progress doubled and declare that the moon has now been
Hit. Shot.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's going to be like the old cartoons where a little piece of the moon just falls moon, down, yeah, right?
There we are. We have shot the moon, and there it is. We've doubled our rate of progress.
But maybe they realize that really this isn't a moon shot. Maybe they really are to be looking at it as a Mars shot. It's farther away. It's more complex.
It is, yeah.
And you can actually use factors of or logarithms. You know, we use exponents to make it a little more fuzzy.
Yeah, it's a shame, isn't it?
Because the 10, raise it 10 power.
It was just a couple of weeks ago we were talking about the Juno probe landing reaching Jupiter's atmosphere, and that was a moonshot.
A Juno shot. You know, that sounds like something you could buy at a bar.
It does. Hey, Juno shot for me and one for my friend. Bottoms up, buddy.
Oh, gosh.
Okay. Got a little bit of time. This one, do you believe in research that comes out of Korea?
Yes.
That is your question. You do?
No, well, no, but, you know, maybe. I mean, let's be honest. We don't believe in research that comes out of the U.S. sometimes.
All right.
I mean, yeah, it's not. We don't judge where it comes from. We judge how funny it is.
Yeah. They were talking about heat waves. Now, they defined a heat wave as a temperature above the 98th percentile lasting at least 2 days.
Or a song in the
70s. That's right. They increased the risk of out-of-hospital cardiac arrest by 14%. This was a multi-city Korean study. Do they have air conditioning in Korea? I'm so embarrassed that I know nothing about other countries. I don't know if they have air conditioning. I don't know if that would even make a difference. If you get temperatures above mid-90s for two consecutive days, it actually rises to 16% risk of – it rises by 16%, I believe, is the thing. And over four – it further increased over time up to 4 days. After that, the effects are relatively small. You know, and this is kind of discouraging because you think about it. We always talk about shoveling snow and having heart attacks. Apparently, if you get into a hot situation, we suspect it works through dehydration, but who knows? Korea is seeing an increase in the annual incidence rate of out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. In 2006, it was 37.5 per 100,000. It's up to 47.8. I mean, that's about a 25% rise in their rate of out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, and their temperatures are rising as well. Studies are limited, so they did this. What they did was they did a 50,000 cases of out-of-hospital cardiac arrest from January 2006 to December 2013 in seven Korean cities with more than 1 million residents. They tested several definitions of a heat wave, and they went with a 98% for more than 2 days and used that. I think it's less, they said, about normal temperatures being protective and more about the fact that cardiac stress climbs as the temperature climbs. And I would say the same thing as the temperature drops or as in weather extremes. I don't know, you know, relationships of cardiac arrest to, say, flooding or other storms. We know that certainly they increase stress levels. But we tend to underestimate the danger of heat. You know, heat is annoying.
Oh, yeah.
But heat can be life-threatening, absolutely life-threatening. Health matters can be life-threatening if we hang on too long as well. We need to take a break, and you do too. Stay tuned for our second fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. We are saluting the moonshot to cure cancer. But with our mooning cancer show, I'm not going to go back over the statistics.
Are we actually going to moon cancer?
Well,
I mean, you make it sound like this is something for Facebook, right?
No, here's the thing.
You know, that stuff's not allowed.
We are more likely to moon cancer than we are to moonshot cancer. We agreed that moonshot was not the right thing. So what could we do with a moon that relates to cancer? And that's all I could think of that would be practical.
Well, I mean, and, you know, let's be honest, that's how we feel about it.
And if two of us moon it, that doubles our rate of progress. And so, bam, we hit the targets.
Yep.
Right? Okay. Our sponsor for the second time, Top 10 Allergy Tips, Asthma, Eczema, Allergic Rhinitis. Here are some tips to help us and guide us. Reminding you from the first fractional portion. Fruit, not always your friend. Many fruits from apples to bananas, peaches and plums can cause symptoms similar to grass or tree pollen. Microwave them. Never eat the peel. Two, don't use toxic chemicals to clean your house. Three, change your pillow every 3 years. Wash it twice a year. Four, limit your exposure to pets as much as you can. I know you love your dog. I have heard that over and over again from my patients. However, if the dog gets in the bed, I cannot help you with your allergies. That just simply overpowers any medicine known to man. Five, tear off the carpets. Use tile or hardwood. hardwood floors and keep them clean. 6. Always use a nylon shower curtain liner. Allergy sufferers are told to shower often to remove pollen and pet danders, and that is true. However, the chemicals in the vinyl liners do escape into the closed area of the shower. Also, with the humidity, with the water pooling up, they can mildew. Robin Wilson recommends replace your vinyl liner with a nylon shower curtain liner. 7. Watch out for indoor mold. Again, anywhere where there is high humidity or there is water, the refrigerator pan, mold can also build up in the water in the dishwasher, along the air conditioning system. Be careful for these areas. They can build up mold and can cause worsening symptoms. 8. Freeze your stuffed toys. Stuffed animals can harbor dust and can harbor dust mites. Freeze all stuffed toys for 24 hours in a Ziploc bag. No, she said a Ziploc bag. Other bags, who knows? I don't know what the deal is there, but a Ziploc bag, at least once a month, freeze your child's stuffed toys for 24 hours to kill the dust mites if you or your child has serious problems with allergies and asthma. 9. Use caution with sunscreens. We are in favor more of using clothing to protect your skin rather than sunscreens. The problem with sunscreens, they attract pollen. And in that case, you may lather up, you may then pollen up, and you will bring that inside. And that brings us to number 10. Keep the outside world from coming in. Take off your shoes before going indoors. Keep your outdoor tools and toys outdoors. Otherwise, you will be bringing outdoor dirt and pollen into your living area. And that, whether it's a dog, whether it's a toy, whether it's a shoe, whether it's your skin, is not a good idea. That is our sponsor, the Top 10 Allergy Tips. Rick, I am going to blow your mind this fractional portion.
Boom.
I have some of the strangest things I have seen in the medical literature. Maybe not exciting strange, like a guy who swallows a cell phone or a man who's impaled on a rowing skull, but these things are interesting enough. This is an open letter from the Department of Neurology at the University of Pennsylvania and from the Massachusetts General Hospital. It was published in the Annals of Neurology in July. An open letter concerning do-it-yourself direct current stimulation of the brain. Okay. Now, you know, Rick, we've talked about this. There are gaming helmets that you can pick up for a couple of $100
right,
that will electrically stimulate your brain while you're gaming and supposedly will make you faster and help you get to a level 11.
At least that's right, what yeah, they use to sell those things.
There are YouTube videos and lots of do-it-yourself websites that will teach you how to connect a 9-volt battery and some wires to your scalp so that you can electrically stimulate your brain yourself. And many people are doing this with the idea that it improves memory, it improves cognitive abilities, mathematical abilities, problem-solving abilities. And these people have written an open letter to those people. And there are 7, count them, 7 points to this letter that I thought were worth repeating. Point number 1, stimulation affects more of the brain than you may think. You think that you're putting an electrode over a certain area of the brain, and that area of the brain you have read controls a certain activity, but it can easily extend beyond brain regions that are connected to that area. So it does not necessarily follow the anatomy. If you are using a brain area that's connected to another brain area, it may flow, in fact, farther and faster than you think. Point number 2, stimulation interacts with ongoing brain activity. So what you do changes how the brain stimulation, the electrical stimulation does. That is, if you are watching TV, playing cards, reading a book, playing a video game, or sleeping, it will have a different effect.
Okay.
Isn't that weird? It will stimulate in a different way.
Wow.
Yeah, depending on what you're doing. So you can't say, look, I remember last time I stimulated this part of my scalp, and I think I was smarter. I felt like I was thinking more clearly. I'll do it again. If you're doing a different activity, it may have entirely a different effect. Number 3, this is key. Enhancement of some abilities may come at the cost of others. The research trial measured 1 or 2 things. They did not measure a battery of brain activity. So you may, in fact, be able to do some stimulation that will help you with video games or math abilities, but it may also have other adverse effects and may actually decrease your ability to do other things by focusing the electrical activity on one area of the brain. These trade-offs are under-recognized. Again, most research studies only focused on one task and didn't really look at the entire spectrum of brain activity. Point number 4, changes in brain activity may last longer than you think. Side effects have been reported 6 months after stimulation and may linger longer than that. That is, it is not true that you turn the current off and whatever bad thing you felt goes away immediately. If you're messing with your brain, we know from our experience with concussions and also from the research on brain stimulation, it may last a lot longer than that. Number 5, small differences in settings may have a big effect. You would expect that doubling the amplitude of the stimulation or doubling the time of the stimulation would double the effect. But actually, in practice, and this has been documented in research, Rick, it may have the opposite effect. It may actually instead of making you feel better, it may make you feel worse. It may quadruple the effect rather than doubling the effect. It's not true that this is something you pour out. Electricity is something you pour out. So right. If you pour out twice as much electricity, you get twice as much effects.
No.
Not true.
No. I'm sure it's regionalized.
Yep. Right. In research studies, point number six, the effects are highly variable across different people. In the research studies of direct brain stimulation, 30% of the subjects responded with changes in the opposite direction from the other subjects using identical settings. So, you know, the idea that you're going to read something that was done on the internet or you're going to get advice from an so-called expert and you're going to duplicate their methods and you're going to duplicate their effects, not true. At least the research doesn't say that. And then the final thing, and this happens over and over and over again in medicine, if we are using it to treat a disease, if we in fact are stimulating your brain after a stroke, if we are stimulating your brain in the case of depression, we used to use electroshock therapy for depression, it is an entirely different risk-benefit ratio than if you walk in healthy and whole and not suffering from a disease and try to turn yourself into a Superman. In those cases, the chances of something going wrong are about equal to the chances of something going right. In the case, if you've had a stroke, if you've had seizures, if you've had a severe depression, the risk-benefit is entirely different. So finally, in conclusion, it is important to know the tissue stimulated and the effects induced are less consistent than people think. Significant trade-offs may be part of the bargain for gains, and whatever changes occur, better or worse, may be long-lasting. So oddly enough, we at Health Matters find ourselves trying to warn people not to hook up electrical current to their scalp to stimulate their brain.
It's a sad, sad day when we have to really try hard to warn people of that.
Yeah, these are prominent. These are the chair of the neurology department at Penn penned this letter in the Annals of Neurology because they are seeing such widespread efforts at homemade efforts at brain stimulation. This is, Rick talked to in our last show about Pokemon Go, which we suspect will still be active by the time this show airs. But there are a lot of things like this that just sort of make you shake your head. Stimulating your brain, not very wise, and the idea that prominent neurologists have to write in a neurologic journal to warn people not to do that, we thought it was worth bringing on the show, and we apologize for wasting your time not stimulating your brain. But please tell your friends, don't do that.
And
put
yeah,
that
yeah,
down.
I mean, yeah, don't. It's really, really a sad, sad day when we have to tell people, please don't apply any electrical current to your head that's not, you know, needed.
Yeah, this is still a research thing, and so many times there's this desperation to be healthier, to be better, to if diseases are not treatable by things that we know are safe, to just go out and to try other things. This is not a good thing to try. Now, in the mind-blowing arena, continuing, this came out of the University of Virginia School of Medicine. It was published in Neuroscience News. It was also published in the journal Nature, and Nature is a journal that publishes advances in science. Profound advances in science, not minor things. So this is shocking to me. This is amazing to me. Published July 13th in the journal Nature and picked up by Neuroscience News. Researchers at the University of Virginia School of Medicine have determined that the immune system directly affects and even controls a creature's social behavior. Let me say that again. Your immune system directly affects and may even control your social behavior.
My immune system.
Your immune system.
And it does that without me knowing.
It does. And this is
Shock myself
Jonathan
too much?
Kipnis, chair of their department of neuroscience, who did not write about the electrical stimulation because he was busy with this. He said, it's crazy, but maybe we are just battlefields for two ancient forces, pathogens and the immune system. And all of those quirky personality characteristics, and maybe I should be a little bit easier on you, Rick, they may simply be a result of the battle between pathogens and your immune system. Now, let me explain what they're saying. Last year, this same group discovered that your brain is actually connected to your lymphatic system. For a long time, we thought the brain was isolated. There was something called the blood-brain barrier, and we thought there was no way the brain would hook up with the lymphatic system or your immune system. That is, your brain was protected from the outside by your immune system, but once something got past that into the brain, the immune system did not react. That is incorrect. They showed that there was that connection last year. This year, what they did, this is really simple stuff what they did, and I don't want to oversell the discovery, but here's what they did. They looked at a molecule, an immune molecule called interferon gamma. We use that for treatment of some diseases. And they looked in mice. They took away interferon gamma. And this is a chemical that your immune system makes in response to infections. When you block interferon gamma in mice, it caused them to become less social. So what happened? You block this immune chemical, and the mice didn't care about other mice. They were loners. They were iconoclastic mice.
Keep them out of the bell tower.
Yeah.
They were loners. They were loners.
Everyone around them, all the other mice said, you know, they were quiet. They kept to themselves. Now, you release the block, and they become social. So gamma, interferon gamma seems to make, the presence of it seems to make them social. Block it, they become antisocial. Restore it, they become social again. Same mice. So it may be that interferon gamma plays a big role in maintaining proper social functioning and our ability to work with others and to be social animals. Now, what's crazy about this, Rick, then is you go back, you remember that mistaken idea that vaccines cause autism.
Right.
That vaccines interfere with your ability to be a social person. What's amazing is that vaccines, and particularly the MMR vaccine, can stimulate your immune system. And among the stimulants that your immune system, among things they stimulate, would be interferon gamma. So, in fact, this research indicates that vaccines may actually stimulate the chemical that makes you sociable. They may actually lead you in the opposite direction. People thought vaccines made you autistic. It may be that vaccines, in fact, stimulate a chemical that makes you sociable. My point is, we're back again, though. Vaccines could influence behavior. I'm not ruling that out. And, you know, that was something that, as a doctor, I worked really hard to debunk the myth that they caused autism. But I'm back saying now, interferon gamma seems to have a big influence on social behavior. Vaccines would seem to be a positive influence, but I don't think we've written the whole story. I believe that your immune system plays a big role in who you are, and so we've got to be really cautious and think this through. I am not in any way being an anti-vaccine person. The fact that they can save lives is enough for me, and right now we don't have enough information about this to make any kind of a decision.
But if they can save lives and make you likable, Tony, you should get vaccinated.
Yeah, but... But if your immune system influences your behavior, you know, when we mess with your immune system, you got to say, you know, this is something we didn't know. And so it brings up some questions. As I said, I'm not being an anti-vaccine person, but when you see the science, you have to acknowledge the science. The science says that our immune system apparently makes a difference in the way we behave. And, you know, Rick, this was back actually May 2015. We brought in something called toxoplasmosis. That's right. The thing you get from cats. And if you remember, we talked about population research that showed people who were positive for toxoplasmosis, they tended to take more chances. They were more prone to road rage. They had more risky behaviors. Yeah, they had risky behavior.
They were good, honest Health Matters listeners.
Yeah, and so, you know, when you look at that, all of a sudden things start to come together. If your immune system influences your behavior and toxoplasmosis stimulates your immune system in your brain, then the evidence is starting to accumulate from different sources that infections could make us who we are. It may be that you're not just a grouchy person. We always think, you know, if you had an infection in your hand and it was a rather severe infection and you were unable to use your fingers well, you'd say, well, I had an infection. But we don't think about the possibility of it influencing your mental abilities.
I have an infection. Hear me roar.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know,
I can be irritable.
Yeah, but most mental health we figure was either just something strange or you're not trying hard enough. You should be a different person.
So, Tony,
we never thought about
that
as an infection.
So then what about people with gingivitis? A walking infection in their mouth all the time.
Could it get to the brain? Could it trigger an immune response?
Do people that have gingivitis, does it affect their social behavior?
Smokers have higher rates of gingivitis. Would gingivitis lead a person to make a mistake like smoking? Which one is the cart, which one's the horse?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so this is the kind of interesting stuff that we kind of get mired down into. But, it's going to be cool to watch and see, but, there's huge implications.
Right. And for me, it changes the idea of mental health. Mental health was that mystery. Why do people have obsessive compulsive disorder? Why are people antisocial?
Stupid? Why? Because they always have an infection.
No,
they always have an infection.
The reason guys are stupid is because of girls.
Yeah, but do they have the infection because they're stupid, or are they stupid because they have the infection?
I don't know.
So but no more chicken and egg. Now we got guy and stupid.
Guy and stupid.
Or, yeah.
Which came first, the guy or the stupid? We may never know. But isn't that fascinating that your personality, and as well as different types of mental illness, may in fact be a battle between invaders in your immune system?
But think about that, Tony, though, how that plays into the socioeconomic status of a region, right? So this region that can't afford vaccination, can't afford good health care, can't afford how to take care of these infections or these types of illnesses, then it only fosters and propagates the mental health disorders.
See, I disagree with you. And the reason I disagree with you is because I've had different germs than you.
Maybe. It's your show. You can disagree all you want. But I'm just saying, these are the things, that the tangents that you can take this on.
Yes.
Right? And so you can turn this research into a regional research effort and see, okay, so what does this mean in California versus Eastern Kentucky versus downtown Chicago? Right? I mean, how does this all play into the socioeconomic
status? No, you're absolutely right. The type of infections you have. What about cat owners versus dog owners? Are they different people? Yes, they are.
Well, yeah. And I mean, let's be honest. Who can tolerate a cat?
Right. And and so would the illness that produces a cat owner,
right,
you see, would there be some type of infection that leads people to like cats? I think so, but I'm not the person.
So you're saying there's something to the cat lady?
Yeah, yeah. I think there must have been some bizarre infection that the changed. But who likes cats, honestly? So mind blown, right? I mean, we've talked about having to actually write an open letter to people who want to shock their brains. We have talked about
shocking their brains.
No, yeah. Yeah. And now we've talked about the fact that the germs that you're exposed to at an early age may, in fact, influence your personality as well as your mental health. Next up, this is the penultimate. This is the king of them all. July 11, 2016, the journal Pediatrics, thumb sucking, nail biting, and asthma and hay fever. Basically, this journal, they looked at the Dunedin Multidisciplinary Health and Development Study. We've looked at this thing before. Follow-up from ages 3 years to 38 years. At 5, 7, 9, and 11, they asked about a child's oral habits, and then they did skin prick tests at ages 13 and 32. And what they found is children who suck their thumbs or bite their nails are less likely to have what they call atopic sensitization. That is, they're less likely to have skin prick tests for allergies in childhood and adulthood. And the idea is this supports the hygiene hypothesis. The cleaner we are, the more our immune system, in fact, becomes our enemy and causes allergies. So we've talked about, having a dog, letting the kids get a little bit dirty from time to time. The authors of this paper are not willing to endorse thumb sucking. This is what one of the authors says. Many parents discourage thumb sucking. We do not have enough evidence to change this. We don't recommend encouraging nail biting or thumb sucking, but perhaps if a child has one of these habits and it's difficult to stop, there is some consolation in the knowledge it might reduce their risk of allergies.
Wow.
Okay, I can't do any more than this. We've got to take a break while you let your brain recover. Don't use electrical stimulation, though. Use natural methods and come back for our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Mooning Cancer Show.
Moon.
It is our response to a cancer moonshot. We think that we can moon cancer. We're not sure that we can moon shoot cancer. Our sponsor for the final time, the top 10 allergy tips, reminding you: asthma, eczema, allergic rhinitis. Here are some tips to help us and guide us. From Robin Wilson, ambassador for the Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America. You know, I need to be an ambassador.
Okay.
I don't know how you get that. I wonder where the Asthma and Allergy Foundation embassy is. That would be the first thing. I'd go visit and ask for sanctuary. She's also the author of Clean Design, Wellness for Your Lifestyle, and I'm going to go through these 10 tips rather rapidly. Fruit is not your friend. Many favorite fruits can cause symptoms similar to grass or tree pollen. If you are sensitive, put it in the microwave for 10 seconds to deactivate proteins. Never eat the peels on fruits if you have severe allergies. 2, do not use toxic chemicals to clean away your house, clean away household dirt. A little dirt is probably better for your health than those toxic chemicals. 3, vintage pillows And pillows that have been around for a long time are likely to cause more symptoms. Wash your pillow twice a year. Replace pillows every 3 years. Rick and I, neither one of us does that, but it sounds like it might be a good idea if we had severe allergies. 4, no such thing as a hypoallergenic dog. A dog that does not shed is not necessarily a dog that does not cause allergies. Do not, never, according to Robin Wilson, this is not me, Robin Wilson says, never allow your dog on your bed. 5, get rid of the carpet. Also get rid of the heavy drapes and the upholstery, tile and hardwood floors, leather and simulated leather furniture, much better choice. 6, nylon shower curtain liner. 4 words, nylon shower curtain liner. The vinyl shirt and the vinyl shower curtain liners, I don't know what a shirt and cower liner is, but a shower curtain liner made out of vinyl can attract mold and mildew and also give off toxic chemicals. 7, watch for indoor mold. Air conditioning system, water pan on your refrigerator, also in your dishwasher. Easy to get mold in those areas where water sits. Try to minimize that and clean it up. 8, freeze the stuffed toys. Freeze all stuffed toys for 24 hours in a Ziploc bag to prevent buildup at least once a month. 9, caution with sunscreen. Again, sunscreen attracts and pollen sticks to it. You walk inside, you're loaded with pollen. Better to use clothing to protect yourself from the sun if you can. And 10, keep the outside world outside. Take off your shoes. Keep the outdoor tools and toys in the garage or shed. Otherwise, you will be bringing the pollen in, and you will deserve whatever you get for that. That's our sponsor, our top 10 allergy tips. This was a model that came out of Imperial College in London about the Zika virus. You know, we have not talked about the Zika virus recently.
No, as much as you like to.
I like to talk about the Zika virus.
You really don't like to talk about it. You like to sing it.
Yeah. I used to sing when we had our show's previous producer. I like to sing about the Zika virus. One time, unfortunately, the background music didn't light, and it was so stupid, I said, I will never sing the Zika song again.
Hmm.
Isn't that sad?
I didn't have to pay him that much either.
Maybe it's me. Maybe it's self-conscious, but I'm not singing the Zika song. This is from Neil Ferguson, published in Science. According to them, their modeling, and this came out of Imperial College London, says that the Zika epidemic is likely to end within 3 years. Now, the reason it's going to end within 3 years is not the best. It's something called herd immunity. That is, at some point, there will be so many people infected with the Zika virus that the Zika virus can't infect new people. And for that reason, it will die off. What has to happen is the Zika virus has to be in your bloodstream. A mosquito bites you, and it gets the Zika virus. It bites the next guy, and they get the Zika virus from the mosquito. If, in fact, we've all had it, if we're all immune to it, it will not be in our bloodstream when the mosquitoes bite, and they will not be able to transmit it. They believe there will be enough of a percentage of the population in these Zika areas that have it and are immune to it. And again, 80% of people don't even have symptoms from the Zika virus. It is especially bad. It will occasionally cause some neurologic problems in healthy people, but it is especially bad for pregnant women, if we've talked about. As more and more people have immunity to Zika, the mosquitoes will not be able to find the virus to transmit it because it simply can't live in your bloodstream anymore. So it is a very, very infectious condition, and very, very infectious conditions like that will burn itself out because you're unlikely to be infected twice. Your immune system will respond to it. And the thing about it is, if it ends within 3 years, it's going to be hard to develop a vaccine for it.
Exactly. You know?
I mean, we can certainly, we can do it, but it's hard for it to do any good.
Right.
The way we're going to get this herd immunity is either we vaccinate everybody and then the Zika virus can't find a way to get into your bloodstream, or we're all just going to get it. We're all going to get sick, and it's going to be in our bloodstream anyway. So using our model, they feel that it will run its course and will start to reduce in the next 2 to 3 years. And they do not believe it will start up again for 10 years because, again, the people who have immunity have to all thin out, leave, go inside or whatever, and then there will come a new group of people who don't have immunity. So fairly simple thing is with a highly infectious condition like this, you get herd immunity. Whether we get a vaccine or not, within 3 years we're going to have herd immunity according to this model, and then the herd immunity will last until a new group of people grow up to adulthood who don't have the immunity, and then the thing will start again. A couple of other things I've seen on Zika. One is, and this is kind of good news, Some of the mosquitoes we thought could carry this was some research that came out of Mexico. Some of the mosquitoes we thought could carry Zika can't. And so the CDC maps published showed that Zika could actually affect much of the United States, similar to West Nile virus. As it turns out, in the at least studying the mosquitoes in Mexico, they did not see a heavy transmission of Zika in the types of mosquitoes we would have here in much of the continental USA. Now, the Aedes aegypti mosquitoes, they're all along the Gulf Coast, so the Gulf Coast is still ripe for an outbreak. But it doesn't look like the rest of the United States. It's not going to be like West Nile where it goes pretty much across the country. It's probably going to stay in the Gulf areas. Also, another thing, and again, this was not this group, but another group, their modeling indicates that probably mosquito spraying is not going to work. This is a tough mosquito. It likes to stay indoors unless somebody comes up and fumigates your house. It is unlikely they're going to be able to eliminate it just by spraying swamps or deserted playgrounds or things like that. This is really a tough mosquito to eliminate. So what it looks like is it's going to continue at least for another couple of years in South America, Central America, probably reach the Gulf Coast, probably not reach the nation's heartland, and then will probably burn itself out. A vaccine may or may not be developed, but it probably will. This will taper off whether it is developed or not. That is, in fact, our Zika update.
Sweet. No singing. No singing.
No, you embarrassed me, and that's it, isn't it? That's
I didn't embarrass you. You embarrassed yourself.
I
didn't embarrass you.
Well, somebody turned the music off. I'm not saying who, but somebody turned the music off.
Yeah, that I can't help you there.
We could blame our show's
producer. I'm going to my grave with that one.
But I don't know. Okay. this from Associated Press, July 13th. Healthcare spending reaches a new peak of $10,345 per person.
That is a lot.
Every man, every woman, every child in the United States.
Per year,
over $10,000. Wow. First time we've topped $10,000 per person.
And that's what, so that's the average.
That's the
right?
average.
So if you are driving down the road and you realize you only paid $2,000 last year, somebody else paid $18,000.
Yep.
Because it averages out.
As a matter of fact, you're absolutely right. It is nowhere near symmetric. Let's see. In fact, U.S. healthcare is wildly uneven. 5% of the population, those who are most frail or ill, account for nearly half the spending in a given year.
I mean, but we talk about this almost. It's one of the common topics, especially with the pharmaceuticals, especially around Hep C, right? So the Hep C drugs are, what, $84,000 for a run of the drugs, but there's only a really small percentage of people paying that. So the people that aren't, I can imagine there are some incredible lopsidedness to these bills.
Yeah. But you look at that, you know, you take a family of four, it should
be
$40,000. And not saying that they're necessarily have that, but to do their part, they would have to kick in $40,000. And so you can run that through any type of insurance exchange, payment system or whatever, benefits manager, whatever. That is their part of our nation's healthcare bill.
Right.
And we can't afford that. We simply cannot afford that. So we have to find some way to trim those costs down.
Doesn't that sound staggering? Can you imagine? I mean, you had a family of five, right?
Yeah.
So $50,000 for you.
$50,000 a year.
A year.
That's my portion of our nation's health care. Again, this is simple math, $3.35 trillion this year, and you divide that by the population of the United States, $10,345 per person. Hospital care, 32%. And again, so this is a big part of it is hospitals. Doctors and clinicians, 20%. Prescription drugs, 10%. Out-of-pocket. This report, and there's no surprise here, projected out-of-pocket costs will continue to increase as the number of people covered by high-deductible plans continues to grow. So, unfortunately, you know, this is it starts at $10,000, is going to continue to rise. That's awful.
It's terrible. I mean, it's unsustainable.
Unsustainable. You're absolutely right. This was something, and along those lines, when we're talking about healthcare spending, this was one I thought was really interesting. This was from the Kaiser Family Foundation back July 14th. Medicare covers 8 out of 10 people in the U.S. who died in 2014. It is. And if you think about it, it makes sense. Medicare, the type of insurance that covers people over age 65, old people tend to die more than young people. So 8 out of 10 people who die had Medicare at the time of their death.
Wow.
So they ask, well, you know, how much does it cost to die in the United States? Average, $34,000 and change, $34,529. Most of that, 51%, goes to hospitals. Skilled nursing, 23%, physicians, 13%, medication, 6%. That's how much it costs. That's the calendar year that you die, how much money was spent on you, $34,000 average. Here's the interesting thing. For people in their 70s, it costs $43,000 the year of your death. For people in their mid-80s, $33,000. And for people in their 90s, $28,000. So as you got older,
you were
they spent less money the year of your death.
But don't you think that's because of there was probably a more abruptness of death?
I think, well, the other thing I think is that we can easily, we can say this is hopeless for a 90-year-old.
Right.
Yeah. For a 70-year-old.
They might get 20 more years.
Yeah. We'd say, gee, we might be able to save them. Let's try using a breathing machine. Let's try chemotherapy for the cancer. Let's see if we can do a big surgery on a 70-year-old. 90-year-old, you say, there's no way. Let's make them comfortable. And so, you know, I mean, making them comfortable, $27,000 the year of their right. Their death, that's a lot of money.
Well, you try. I mean, you don't just not try anything. I mean, you try, and there's where the 27 comes in. It's just you don't go to the nth degree. I mean, there's certain things that are just more risky, and so you just don't do it.
Right, right. So, you know,
I can see that.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting. But now the trade-off, again, $10,000 per year per person. You add $20,000 to get from 70 to 90, and then you spend $27,000 in a 90-year-old instead of $43,000. So it's not like living to age 90 is cheaper in any way.
Right, right.
It's always going to be more expensive to live longer, but the last year of your life is cheaper as you get older. Can I do one more?
You can.
All right. This was, and again, we're talking about the insurance business and about how much we pay for our health care. July 19th. Health Affairs, Yale School of Public Health, a woman named Abigail Friedman, looked at the smoking surcharge. Now, you may remember the Affordable Care Act, insurers were not able to charge higher premiums based on whether a person was sick. They could vary their premiums with age, geography, family size, and smoking status. Smoking, the only health condition, if you'll allow it to be that, that had any impact on your premiums. So they looked at 200,000 non-elderly people who qualified for tax insurance credits. And what they found was the surcharges, this is up to 50% over a non-smoker, and that's not eligible for support. So, a 49-year-old with an income at 150% of poverty level, if he's a non-smoker, he pays $60 per month. We would help. The tax credit helps the rest. But if you surcharge him for smoking, that essentially doubles his out-of-pocket expenses. Basically, the number of smokers with insurance grew from 70 to 76% of total. But if they hadn't had smoking surcharges, they believe it would have grown to 80% looking at the rest of the population. The other thing is there is no evidence that charging a surcharge made people stop smoking.
Wow.
So what you did was you charged smokers extra, and they didn't get the insurance.
Hmm.
The surcharge, in fact, doesn't help anything. I mean, it makes a little bit of extra money, but you might as well. You could just go ahead and charge the tobacco companies directly if you want the money.
Right.
You're not influencing health behavior by charging extra for insurance. You're also not influencing health behavior by staying on the air. Rick, let's get off the air.
Special thanks to our summer Morehead State Public Radio producer, Tanner Boyd, and to Eric Bilber, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or just visit us on Facebook. Do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember,
Health Matters is a health radio show for adult males who have low or no testosterone.
It is not known if Health Matters is safe or effective in children younger than age 18, radio shows that are applied to the skin may have different doses, different strengths, different application instructions that may lead to different levels of testosterone in your body.
Health Matters can transfer from your body to others.
Ew.
This can happen if other people come into contact with the area where Health Matters was heard.
Unexpected signs of puberty have happened in young
Uh-oh.
Children who were accidentally exposed to radio shows through skin-to-skin contact with men using health radio products like Health Matters.
Women and children should avoid contact with the unwashed or unclothed area where health matters has been heard.
This one didn't copy over very well.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
If a woman or child makes contact with the Health Matters application area, the contact area on the woman or child should be washed well with soap and water right away.
We recommend you actually wash out your children's ears after the show just as a precaution. Whatever you do, do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.